Uneven access to COVID vaccine is warping the global economy. I'm David Brancaccio with confirmation this morning that the U.S. economy grew at an annual rate of 6.4% January to March. Attention turns to the quarter that is about to end. With low interest rates and all the fascination with real estate these days, you might think this would be a key driver of expansion. But as spring turns to summer here, places to buy are hard to find. People staying put, not selling amid pandemic constraints. Plus, builders are dealing with expensive materials. That leaves other consumption. Many a Thursday, we consult Diane Swonk, the chief economist at Grant Thornton.
We're seeing really strong gains in spending. The pivot from spending on everything from your home and exercise equipment and things to make it comfortable in quarantines, people want to see and be seen. And they're spending on everything from clothing and makeup and luggage to getting out and stepping out and traveling. And so you really are seeing a shift back into services. So also catching up on all those medical visits that got delayed during all of this period in time now that they're vaccinated. And so you're seeing this move back into services. And we're starting to finally begin to catch up on the shortages, all those empty bare shelves out there that you find. We're going to start to catch up on that over the summer and into the fall, but it'll take a while to rebuild all those inventories.
Diane Swonk is the chief economist at Grant Thornton, which is a big tax and advisory firm. And news, the number of people signing up for unemployment benefits fell only slightly in the last week. 411,000 new filings was slightly higher than expected, with recovery happening but taking time. Let's do the numbers. Early trading, the Dow up 279 points, 0.8%. The S&P is up 0.6%. The NASDAQ is up 0.7%. This week, the Supreme Court agreed with two California fruit farmers who had argued that unions organizing on their property was an unconstitutional invasion. The case upends a 1975 California law that permitted union organizers to visit farm property 120 days a year during non-work hours. This ruling opens the door to other employers who want to block oversight of their workplaces. Marketplace's Caroline Champlin has more.
Union organizers say that without access to farms, they have to use less effective recruiting tactics.
Sometimes it's by visiting workers where they live. Sometimes it's by trying to find out where they might be doing their laundry.
That's Mario Martinez, general counsel for United Farm Workers, the union in this lawsuit. In their initial complaint, one grower said union organizers had disrupted operations on their farm with bullhorns early in the morning. United Farm Workers countered that the grower had committed an unfair labor practice. But UC Berkeley law professor Catherine Fisk says few farm workers are unionized, and the ruling could stifle future organizing.
Which is going to ensure that agriculture remains what it has long been. Difficult, dangerous, and very low paid.
Fisk expects this decision will set a precedent for more challenges to unions and expand property owners' rights, no matter the industry. I'm Caroline Champlin for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Now to the global distortions. When some countries get vaccinated up and others lag, we like to check in with Zanny Minton-Beddoes, editor-in-chief of The Economist magazine, who had been sequestered in Britain during pandemic, but has just arrived in New York City, a place full of energy in a state with a 70% plus vaccination rate. Welcome to America, Zanny.
Hi, David. Great to be here. And yes, I am in New York. I'm in the U.S. for the first time since February 2020. And it feels like a country that is putting COVID behind it. And that's increasingly the case in those countries which have high vaccination rates. And the result, as you say, is we have a new fault line in the world economy, I think, increasingly between the jabs and the jab nots. Those countries that have much lower vaccination rates have the risk of future outbreaks. They are unable to ease lockdown as easily. And that means that their economic recovery is weaker. And unfortunately, those countries disproportionately are the poorer countries.
And look what happens to the flows of global capital if that's allowed to continue.
If the U.S. economy is roaring along, even a dovish Fed at some point will raise rates, and it's clearly indicated that it's leaning to do that sooner than people thought a few weeks ago. The expectation of higher rates in the U.S. sucks capital into the U.S., strengthens the dollar. It means that it is harder for those countries that borrow in dollars, that have to worry about capital fleeing from their countries. They then have to raise interest rates to stop that capital going. And so you might have the weaker economies, the less vaccinated parts of the world, facing that terrible vise that emerging economies often face of having to tighten even though their economies are weak. So they may, you know, jab later, but hike too soon.
And this is even a phenomenon for some of the more industrialized countries. You think of places like Korea and Japan that were seen as managing their pandemic fairly well, but the vaccination rates lag. And you think there's going to be extra suffering, certainly at a human scale, but also at the economic level?
They have been slower about vaccinating. And as a result, their economies are more vulnerable. Travel is much harder. And they, I think, will suffer and are suffering. You see it actually in their economic growth recently relative to, say, the bounce back in the US and in parts of Europe. And it's also, of course, partly to do with the scale of stimulus. But there is a growth gap emerging relative to what one might have expected. So I'm not sure that people have sensed how Asia, Southeast Asia, is doing less well than you might have thought, say, 6 months ago.
Zanny Mitten-Beddoes, Editor-in-Chief, The Economist. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Great to talk to you.
And in case you're wondering, given travel restrictions, how did that Brit get in? Well, Zanny has children who are U.S. citizens, a legal exemption. Earlier this month, CEOs of the big airlines called on the two countries to lift these U.S.-U.K. restrictions, given high vaccination rates on both ends. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.